Blog Talk Radio.
And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalist Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I am Tim Turner, along with a co-host, Roscoe Nance, and we hope to have just another incredible hour of sports talk as we're going to kick around a number of topics today. It was a great weekend all around in sports as the NBA playoffs started. There's some surprises there, and some series are a lot closer than we thought, and some aren't. And then we have with us as well on Sunday, from Thursday through Sunday, the story was what was going on in Augusta. And one for the ages, where Tiger Woods won his fifth green jacket. He's made a really great redemption story there, coming all the way back from all his personal problems, physical problems with the back ailment, and a series of other physical things going on with him. And people wondered if he'd ever win another major. And then we got tonight, the NFL releases its 2019 schedule next week. The NFL has its draft in Nashville, so there's a lot that's going on in sports. And we will have with us tonight one of the finest minds in all of football sports journalism, Jerry Bell of USA Today, will be with us a little bit later. But Roscoe, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine. This is interesting times, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff to keep up with and to talk about. An exciting weekend. You know, I'm not a golf fan per se, but, Tiger, he roared one more time, and, suddenly the talk of him catching Jack Nicklaus for the most major wins is alive again after his performance over the weekend. So, the Tiger watch is on again, and, you just can't count him out when it comes to that record. And it was just a fabulous performance for him. And the NBA is getting going. And like you said, some surprises. But I think when the dust settled, probably all the teams that were expected to win will win in the first round. Now, but this, and it really gets serious the next round. Some people might get knocked off, but we'll see.
Well, that's gonna be interesting to see how things do shake out. I was really, Golden State with their flop, 31-point lead, and then they lose to the Clippers, and then they also lose DeMarcus Cousins for possibly the rest of the playoff run with a torn quad. But we'll get to that. We got football on the mind, and like I said, the NFL they're having their scheduled release show tonight on NFL Network. But with us tonight, as our own NFL expert, one of the finest sports journalists there is out there, covering the NFL forever. With us tonight is Jared Bell of USA Today. Jared, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. What's going on, Tim?
All right, how you doing, sir? Good to have you with us.
Yes.
Hey, JB.
Roscoe in the house. What's going on, my man?
I'm okay, JB. How you hanging?
Oh, man, it's all good, man. Getting ready for this draft next week, and people are going to be looking at the schedule tonight and tomorrow, and they're going to be having visions of their teams going to the Super Bowl, and they're going to be chalking up wins and they go, oh yeah, I see 12-4, and oh man, it's amazing. You get to this part, and then the season starts, and some of those games that you think are dog games end up being great games, and
this is really this is really a great time of year because everybody's unbeaten, and you know the championships is in everybody's future, and all the draft picks are future Hall of Famers, and then September rolls around and reality sets in.
Yeah, yeah, but I see just they got the crawl going on the TV here, and your team, the Steelers, got 5 primetime games tied for the most in the NFL. So, you know,
what is that about?
Make the
what
playoffs
is that
last year. That's
what is that about? What is that
see,
about?
See, that chaps me. That kind of stuff like that with the Steelers like that, and you get the Jets who get like 19 games, and we don't play but 16 the regular season. And then, you know, the Giants and Jets always get playoff games, and they never make the play. They get primetime games, never make the playoffs, you know.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
kind of funny, but you know how it is, man. You got these certain teams are TV draws. The Cowboys.
You know,
Exhibit A, okay,
yeah.
Hadn't won squat in terms of, you know, playoff action in like 20 years. Okay, I think they may have won one or two playoff games, but, you know, you think about the Cowboys of the mid-90s, you know, winning Super Bowls and all that stuff, and they're still the most popular team. They're the biggest TV draw and all of that. So the Steelers get a little bit of that. You know, they're getting that exposure. But we know we're going to see a lot of Patriots. I bet you we're going to see a lot of New Orleans Saints. And in terms of the national – broadcast. The Rams will be in there, I'm sure. But, yeah, you got certain teams, man. They still going to draw the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. So,
yeah.
We'll
and then come playoff team, and here comes this team that you haven't seen all year, and you're wondering, oh, where did they come from? Well,
exactly.
You know, they've been doing it the whole year. We just didn't see it on a national level.
Yeah.
Okay, so
you know,
let's take
this. That's one of the crazy things, because – I'll cut you off real quick, but that's one of the crazy things about the NFL is that you go back the last 20 years, and it's like every year, without exception, there's like 4 or 5 teams that made the playoffs that didn't make it the year before. So you get that topsy-turvy, you know, anybody could do anything. That's what the NFL loves. So I always look at it like you probably got about 4 or 5 teams that you know are really going to be good just because of, you know, how they're built. And then you got 4 or 5 teams you know going to be bad because of how they're built. And then in the middle, you got about 20-something teams, and it could go either way.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of the NFL, man.
Yeah.
Well, here's your crystal ball. Are they going to have a parade downtown Cleveland next year? Because I can just see them getting a ton of primetime games just for the mere fact that the New York people, they love their old players too, OBJ and – Baker Mayfield,
you know,
together.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're going to be exciting to watch, and they were better last year. Unfortunately for Hugh Jackson, they were better after he left. This is when they really hit their stride. So, yeah, there's a lot of expectations, but you know, Dan Snyder and the Burgundy and Gold in Washington, as Roscoe knows fully well, they won a lot of off-season championships.
Oh, every year.
for a minute, yeah, they were defending champs, repeat when it comes to off-season. And you got to put it on paper. And we've seen other teams over the years, like the Eagles, that one year where they had the quote-unquote dream team, and they didn't do much with it. And so Cleveland, the thing you like about them, A, they got a quarterback, and, you know, OBJ is a big-time player. But you need more than one. But, you know, they've got a lot of young talent, right? But before you start crowning them and start talking about parades and all that kind of stuff, just remember they don't have LeBron. And they got to win a playoff game first before you can even think about talking about a championship. And I know Pittsburgh is going to come back with a vengeance, you know, this coming season. And Baltimore, you can look at them and shake your head and say, "And," but they are always in there, and they're one of those teams that gets better as the season goes along. The Patriots, we know, do that. But the Ravens over the years have also been a team that you don't expect much from them, but I give Harbaugh a lot of credit. and Ozzy obviously stocking them and doing what he did for so many years with them. They're a team that is pretty much always going to be in the hunt as well. So Cleveland, yeah, you may get through at some point, but it's not going to be easy. They're going to have to get through Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
But, you know, you're talking about
Baltimore.
And you
just totally left out the Bengals.
Yeah. And,
is there
and,
no
right,
hope
in Cincinnati? They could all – we may turn around and say, oh, yeah, the Bengals. I just don't see it with them. And this new young coach, Zach Taylor, who 2 years ago was like the quality control guy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think the Bengals going to be in for a world of trouble, but maybe you could save this tape, I guess, because you never know, but I'm not expecting nothing from the Bengals.
Well, you know, you talk about Cleveland, but Freddie Kitchens, you know, he's never been a head coach anywhere.
Yeah, this is true, too. This is
so,
true.
You know, you just don't know. You just
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah.
You talk about Baltimore, they're the kind of team – you know, you count them out, and being at the end of the season, you're scratching your head and wondering, how did they do it? I mean,
yeah, and that's some hardball. And you think about it, like the Jacksonville Jaguars a couple of years ago, you talk about coaching. They got the Patriots down in the AFC Championship game by double digits in the second half. And that's where your coaching really does come into play. It's like, how do you manage that? Okay, fellas, we got 25 minutes to go to the Super Bowl. We know Tom Brady's over there. What can we do to leave here with a W, right? And they couldn't get it done even when they had, you know, got spotted, like I say, double-digit lead. And so I thought I was at that game, and I just thought the coaching in the second half was terrible. They just got all conservative and just really gave the Patriots – you know, exactly what they wanted was a chance to get back into the game. So, yeah, Freddie Kitchens, Zach Taylor, Matt LaFleur, we can throw, you know, some of these other, you know, young people out there. Cliff Kingsbury, oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Well, see,
okay.
It started, that Jaguars game, it started that drive just before the half when New England saw they're scared of us. They played it conservative when they had a chance to go in and do something with that.
Yeah. So you got to kind of know how to manage game management, situational football. That's Bill Belichick's mantra, you know. Be smart when you know the situation that is happening with the game. But anyway,
well, you mentioned
like
Kingsbury in Arizona, who's going to be there this first year, and it's like, do you think it was a really super quick trigger on Steve Wilks out there,
totally.
Or do you think They saw that this is not going to work?
It was a combination of, yes, it was a quick trigger. I mean, you never see a head coach get fired after 1 year when he came in with a rookie top quarterback and Josh Rosen. Now that's going to change now because they're going to take Kyler Murray. But, you know, you go back to last year, they got the rookie quarterback, they got Steve Wilks. And, you know, it's not like you can't go get an offensive coordinator to work with Josh Rosen and the quarterback's coach because Wilks came from the defensive side. So that was wrong. But the other thing about Arizona that really kind of baffles me is the fact that Steve Keim, the general manager, is still there after being suspended, by the way, last year early in the season by his own team because of his drunken driving conviction, and he kept his job. So, you know, I wrote about it right after, you know, the end of the season when all the coaches got fired that, you know, some of these coaches you really can only defend so much, but by the same token, a lot of general managers are skating, and Steve Keim in Arizona would be one of those examples. So I think we should see general managers held to the same accountability or at least more accountability than they have had traditionally because we see coaches get bounced after 1, 2, 3 years and you wonder kind of what the synergy is like in the building in terms of getting the right players and all of that. So now Keim has got Kingsbury, and you never know, Kyler Murray might save all their butts. You know, you get a player like that. That can make such a difference, but you still got to surround him with people. You know, that's anybody. You know, you still have to support him with playmakers and offensive line protection and defense and all of that. But, you know, you look at Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City with a lot of good support. Not on defense, but a lot of good support. And look at what they were able to do. So that's obviously what they're hoping for with Kyler Murray.
But did anybody see that from Mahomes? Are they, is now Mahomes the prototype that everybody says we got to get one of those guys? Because I'm looking at the Haskins kid. He's not like that at all.
Right, right. But you know what Trent Dilfer said about Dwayne Haskins? Trent Dilfer, who I respect immensely, used to be on ESPN, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He does these Elite 11 camps. He's been doing that for several years, where he gets these college quarterbacks in there and he works them in a camp and all that stuff. He said of all the guys that have ever been to his camp, Dwayne Haskins reminds him most of Tom Brady. Take that to the bank.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
Yeah. Dwayne Haskins. And he was talking about it from a couple different perspectives. He was talking about the athleticism or lack thereof. Okay, Haskins is a pocket guy like Brady. But he was also talking about it from a football intelligence standpoint. And Haskins has really impressed some people, although it's weird. He's like the guy this year in this draft thing where some people were saying he's sliding. And you said, well, what? 2 months ago at the Combine, they was talking about him and Kyler Murray, 1 and 1A. And now all of a sudden, you hear a lot of noise that this quarterback from Missouri, Drew Locke, is, you know, higher rated by some teams than Haskins. Well, we'll see in time how it all plays out. But I'm going to still take Trent Dilfer's word and put a lot of stock in that. He may not turn out to be the next Tom Brady, but if you're getting compared to Tom Brady coming out of college, I'll take that.
But, you know, that's really interesting, you know, what he said, because think about it. That's something that you never, ever hear about black quarterbacks, you know, a lack of athleticism,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And their smarts.
Yeah, it's, yeah. And
you
know, the
that.
Other guy.
You never hear that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And the other guy he could probably compare him to as well would be Byron Leftwich, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you could say Ben Roethlisberger, but Ben Roethlisberger is a little more athletic than Tom Brady and then most quarterbacks. He's as big as can be. But, you know, Roethlisberger be shaking people off and he's scrambling and extending plays. But, and you know, so you don't see a lot of that from Brady. But you think about Byron Leftwich, who was a decent quarterback. You know, he was never a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but he was a serviceable, you know, a better than average quarterback for a few years. And but the thing about it, look at him now. Byron Leftwich is the offensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep.
So he's got his fingers on Jameis Winston now, and that speaks to his ability to translate what he knows to other people. And Bruce Arians was telling me at the Combine a few weeks ago, it took him 3 years. When Arians was the Arizona coach, it took him 3 years to convince Byron Leftwich to get off the golf course and come be a coach. And Arian said the reason why he did it was because he just knew Byron Leftwich because he had worked with him in Pittsburgh. Remember, Leftwich was with the Steelers for a minute at the end of his career, backing up Ben Roethlisberger. And so along with Charlie Batch, and Arians was the coordinator there, so they were in the same room every day. So he knew what Byron Leftwich brought to the game from an IQ standpoint. And he said it took him 3 years to talk him out of you know, not wanting to be a coach, and now he loves it, and now Arians. So he had him in Arizona, and then now that Arians got, you know, hired by the Bucks, he brought Leftwich and Todd Bowles in as his coordinators.
Yeah. With that said, you know, with Arians and Leftwich working with Jameis Winston, I mean, if he doesn't turn the corner with those two guys in his ear, I mean, come on,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he should. Well, you know, and they need him to because, you know, and the thing is, if you look at Jameis Winston and his body of work in his NFL career, you know, what's it been, 4 years or whatever, I mean, definitely not bad at all, and really better than average. But when you're the number one pick overall, you know, the bar is way up there.
Yeah,
and
okay,
so,
is not good enough.
Isn't it a commercial?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then you think about the division they in. You in a division with Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan, who was for a minute the highest paid player in NFL history before Aaron Rodgers and before Russell Wilson. But Matt Ryan's a productive, consistent quarterback for the most part, you know. But he's in.
JB,
and,
don't say that, JB. You're running Tim hot.
Productive, I will say. He's got numbers. And he has been to a Super Bowl, you know. Yeah, but anyway.
My nickname for him, JB, my nickname for him is Matty Soft Serve. They call him Matty Ice around here. I call him Matty Soft Serve.
Okay, Matty Soft Serve. You know what?
Go ahead.
No, I think you said it. I think you said it. When he's on, he can do some big things, right? But and sling it around. But he's the third best quarterback at best in the division. And you can make an argument, is it him or Jameis? But obviously Cam and Drew Brees 1-2 in the NFC South. So, So, but anyway, they need Jameis Winston to take it up another notch, because if you're going to be – and, you know, Tampa Bay's always played New Orleans well. You know how it goes. You know, one team in this division, doesn't matter how good or bad the record is, they can give fits to this other team. And that's what Tampa Bay has been to New Orleans. Now, if they can turn around and be that to the Falcons and the Panthers, too, they might win the division. But you know.
Right.
Imagine they play in New Orleans every week.
Well, speaking of quarterbacks in the NFC South, Cam Newton with his injury situation, is he going to be okay? Will he have to make some changes in the way he plays or what?
You know what? I don't really think you're going to see a lot with him changing much with how he plays, because that's been a theme throughout his career. And the big thing for him last year was, you know, Norv Turner coming in. And Norv loves him. And I just talked to Norv a couple of weeks ago. He loves him. In terms of the health, you don't get a lot of details on the rehab, but have not heard any negatives out of it. I think they think, like Rivera at the NFL meetings was saying, everything was looking good. He was on schedule, you know, and who's never not on schedule. But anyway, but here's the thing that's interesting about that, though. No, but here's the deal. Remember, he had this same issue or a similar issue 2 years ago in the offseason and elected not to have surgery and tried to rest it, rehab it, kind of the old Joe Montana thing, right? And back in 1992 or whatever, you know, I'm not going to have surgery. I'm just going to work this thing. And Cam Newton tried to do that, and then guess what? He wasn't ready for training camp. He wasn't ready at all in the offseason, mini camps and all that stuff. And then they got to training camp, and he still wasn't ready. And all that carried into the season, you know. And so this year the decision was made, okay, once the season was over, remember they shut him down at the end, and it was like, okay, we're going to fix this thing and go forward. So they've taken a different approach with how they are trying to manage it. And I don't know where to put the blame on that one, just because it'd be unfair for me to say it off the top of my head. So I don't know if it was Cam, if it was the team, if it was a combination of both of them or what. But that was the way it was approached a couple of years ago, was to wait and let it heal and rest up in the offseason. It never got back to where it was, and so he ends up, you know, a year later needing surgery. And so he went and got it this time right away, and hopefully, you know, he'll be ready to go so he could, you know, be fresh at the beginning of the season. Joe Flacco had a similar thing with the Baltimore Ravens, not this past season, but last season, where, you know, he had all these problems in the off season and tried to, you know, get it right and rest, and then got to the season and he looked like crap. So there's something to be said. Everybody can't be Michael Strahan and miss training camp and come in and do what you got to do. Yeah, you know, different positions too, but. But, yeah, Cam and Norv, I like that combination together. And, you know, you ask about whether or not he would have a different style. That was always something with Ron Rivera. I think they worked through most of that. But I remember talking to Norv about it during the season last year, and he was like, shoot, I don't want to change him because that's who he is, and that's what makes him who he is. When you start trying to tell a guy, you know, don't be great, don't run, and, you know, play scared, then you really run into problems. You're throwing the whole system off. So the big thing with him is just kind of like be smart, okay? So if you're running, run out of bounds and get those, you know, you don't have to get 9 yards when you can get 7, you know. Just be smart with your body. And I think Cam showed that, you know, and really has shown it over a number of years as his career has progressed, that he's better able to take care of himself a little bit better. And the shoulder doesn't really have anything to do with that. That's, you know, that's probably just a throwing thing. I can't think of an acute injury that happened to it, you know, where you say, oh, yeah, that's where, you know, he got it. You know, maybe somebody else can think of an instant, but I can't.
Well, you talk about
now.
Being
you
were smart.
Talking about a guy having to be smart. I was just saying, with being smart, the Eagles have to be smarter this year with their quarterback. They don't have Nick Foles as a plan B anymore.
Yeah.
So you think of Carson Wentz and what happened to him 2 years ago? What do you think about those guys? As it is, listening to you guys talk, I've been perusing the schedules. I think the Eagles have the most primetime games this year.
Really?
Or they're tied with everybody.
Okay.
They have 5 primetime. Cowboys have 5. The Giants, I think, have 4. Cleveland has 4.
Got 5.
I'm just looking.
Yeah.
What's that now?
Wow.
The Steelers got 5.
And
so,
Steelers got 5.
But,
wow.
Yeah. So, but going with the Eagles, what are they going to do if they can't? If he goes down again?
Yeah, because you know that's one guy who needed to change his style, and I remember going there early last season and asking them and seeing what his whole vibe was. I'm not changing anything. And so when he's saying all that kind of stuff, you know, that just lets you know your mindset is not where it really, really needs to be to protect yourself. And, you know, Carson Wentz took a lot of chances. He made so many great plays, you know, as Mr. Houdini. And that was totally missing, and that was a total, you know, benefit for the Eagles offense. So you got to find that right balance. But see, Carson Wentz is not Cam Newton either in terms of body build. I mean, he's a big dude, and he's very athletic. I mean, he's super athletic, but Cam is so different, you know, because, you know, Cam is not RG3, for example. You know what I'm saying? Cam will inflict Cam and Roethlisberger. They would put more pain on you than they take it, okay? But back to Carson Wentz, yeah, he needs to be smarter.
When you talk about playing smart, you know, to me the epitome of that is Russell Wilson. If you notice what I've noticed, whenever he runs, he always manages to end up close to the sidelines.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, he
and
runs
step
with
out
purpose.
Of bat, he step out of bounds. He, you know, being a baseball player, he knows – how to slide, when to slide, and he really milks the play for as much as he can get, and then, you know, he knows when to say when.
Yeah, and you know what's happened with him, Sko, which is so apropos that now he's the highest paid player in the NFL, is the fact that if you look at his career and the rushing, you know, output he's had, and the scrambling he's done and all that, it's gone down every year pretty much. And so he's learned how to protect himself. And he's Mr. Houdini too, but he doesn't run as much as he did. And I want to say last year he ran the fewest times than he had ever, you know. And that's saying a whole lot because we know what he can do when he gets his legs, but, you know, gets moving. But I think, yeah, he's made a definite attempt to preserve himself. And so I'm sitting here, I just called it up online. He only ran 67 times all season last year. That was the fewest of his career, okay?
It doesn't seem that way because whenever he did run, you know, it was in critical situations.
They needed it.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. That's just being smart. So, you know, and I just think that kind of reflects, you know, his growth as a quarterback. So now you're talking a guy, you know, 7 years into the league and all of that, and that's what that means. So, yeah, he ran the fewest times, and he had the highest passer rating of his career last year. So that's some heck of a balance, right?
Right.
Yeah, and he was more efficient as a passer, and he ran less. And they would have, you know, you talk about the surprise team this year. We talked at the top of the show about, you know, one of these teams popping up, making the playoffs. I didn't have the Seahawks making the playoffs last year, and I don't think a lot of people didn't. Now, they didn't do much once they got there, but the fact that they made the playoffs, that was a big deal, man.
That was a rebuilding year. That was a rebuilding year for them, and they won, what, 10 games?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of that goes on Russell Wilson's. So what's happened with them, too, is that, you know, they've put more on Russell now as a thrower, and they've put more on building the thing around him, even though every team wants balance. So you want to be able to run it when you want to run it. You know, you want to have that kind of balance. And, you know, that's the thing with Seattle, and it will be moving forward. Yeah, they'll probably still hope they can have a big-time defense with cheap players. You know, when I say cheap, I mean, you know, guys they get later in the draft and guys playing on rookie contracts and things like that, because they're paying Russell a lot of money, but they still need to get him a solid running game just so that he doesn't have to run. And like I said, last year they seemed to have it. They did it with about two or three running backs, and if that's how you got to do it to keep him – fresh and, you know, without taking all those hits, then more power. And they're going to want to do that even more now because you're paying them $35 million a year. It's like, hey, I don't want you running around for $35 million.
And they really need to find him, you know, a really big-time receiver. I mean, Doug Baldwin is solid. And they need, a tight end would help him also.
Yeah.
Now, getting back over to the draft for a second there, you look at Arizona, they have number one. And you've already penciled in Murray is going there. And here you have Josh Rosen, last year's number one. That has to be just an incredibly awkward position for him to be in, but a really great one for Murray.
Yeah, see, the thing is that, you know, Josh Rosen is not Cliff Kingsbury's guy. He was Steve Wilkes' guy. You see what happened to Steve Wilkes. So I wrote a column about it right before the combine. It's like, well, shoot, if they're going to do that to Steve Wilkes, get rid of him after 1 year, then you know you can't just say I'm going to keep Josh Rosen just because we got him last year. But it reminds me of what the Cowboys did back in 1989. And it's not the same thing because Rosen has been there for 1 year. But when Jimmy Johnson came in with Jerry Jones, obviously, they had the number one pick in the draft, and they took Troy Aikman. And then Steve Walsh, who was Jimmy Johnson's quarterback at the University of Miami, he came out early in the supplemental draft. You know, they had that supplemental draft in June or July. And they do it every year. It might be only two or three players in it for special circumstances or whatever. And Walsh came out, and the Cowboys took him. And they gave up the next year's number one pick for him, which was also like number one overall, actually. And so they had Troy Aikman and Steve Walsh. Awkward situation, two rookie quarterbacks. You got the one, Aikman, who everybody said was the number one, you know, guy and was, you know, destined to be a star. And then you had Walsh, who didn't have the physical, you know, attributes that Aikman had, but he was Jimmy Johnson's quarterback. And won a national championship or something. I don't know if he won a national title or not, but he was Jimmy's guy with a lot of success at the University of Miami. And they took him, and they said, and I talked to Jimmy about it a couple months ago and wrote a column about it. And Jimmy was like, well, I knew it was just a short-term thing, and we were going to trade Steve Walsh. I knew we were going to keep Troy Aikman, but you just have to get an opportunity. And if you get a quarterback, so many people need him, you'll get something. So they ended up trading Steve Walsh for like two number ones or something crazy like that, or number one, two, three, you know, just some high price. And that kind of helped give them some more ammunition as they started building those Super Bowl teams. But, you know, for Arizona, that's got to be what happens with Josh Rosen. Somebody had to like him last year that didn't get him and still needs a quarterback. Maybe it's the Giants. You know, maybe that's why people were saying, well, the Giants are not so hot on Dwayne Haskins. Well, maybe they might have their eye on Josh Rosen. We'll see.
A lot of intrigue this time of year.
Yeah, for sure.
And what I found covering the NBA around draft time, nobody tells you the truth.
It's lion season.
Oh, yeah.
Misinformation, you know, smoke screens. One of my favorite stories, Roscoe, was Jeff Fisher, the old Titans coach, right? And, you know, the Titans were picking in the top five or six or something. And I don't even remember the player's name, goodness. But they had picked Pac-Man the year before. Or maybe it was Pac-Man. It was like, well, what are you guys going to do? And, you know, what do you think about this? And Fisher looked me straight in the eye. He said, there's no way we're taking a cornerback. We did that last year. And so when they took Pac-Man, it was like 2 years in a row they took a top, you know, draft pick and use it on a cornerback. But he swore up and down, there's no way we're going to, that doesn't even make sense for us to do that. Well, of course I printed it, and of course it happened. So that was one classic example of
I had the opposite experience. Isaiah Thomas.
Somebody told you the truth?
Isaiah Thomas, when he was with Toronto, you know, he said that Marcus Camby was his guy.
Uh-huh.
If he was there. And I didn't believe.
Uh-huh.
Because, you
uh-huh.
know, nobody else was telling me the truth, so why should he? But sure enough, that's who he picked.
Kingsbury said, I fully expect Josh Rosen to be a quarterback with the Cardinals.
When did he say
that? Is that a lie?
When did he say that? Because he said
a couple of weeks ago.
Over time. Yeah.
And I think at the same time, the kid at Duke, Williamson, said right after the Duke lost in the NCAA tournament that he was definitely coming back to Duke for his sophomore year.
Did he say he was coming back to play? Or he was coming back to visit?
That's right.
I'm coming back to clean out my locker. That's what he meant. That's what it was.
Coming back to see my girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
The Kingsbury said how long Rosen would be quarterback for the Cardinals.
Oh, he didn't put a timetable on. He said, but he was going to be there. So
right.
for mini camp.
So I'm saying, you got to really, 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 you know, take it with a grain of salt. And then there's just the smoke screens and stuff where. You know, these down and dirty, silent assassins and stuff like that, where people be putting out dirt on people, right?
Yeah,
the scandals,
yeah.
You know, and then there's other circumstances. Like I remember Warren Sapp a few years ago. You know, the word got out that he had tested positive for marijuana or whatever, and he slid all the way down to 12, I think it was. And look, he's in the Hall of Fame now. But, you know, Dan Marino's another one. Slid all the way to 28.
Same thing with
Marino.
I'm like, gosh.
Yeah, he had a reputation as, you know, being a party animal, man. But, you know, party animals can win, too. LT was a party animal, and he's a Hall of Famer. So, you know. It's a delicate thing because if you miss on a guy that's got some questions, then you're gonna always, you know, kick yourself for taking them. And so, it's easy for people like me on the outside to, you know, second guess and criticize and all that because that's what we do. but sometimes if I'm in the same situation, I don't know how I would handle some of these situations. I guess I would want to
but
know
isn't
more.
These guys make
that's
their money
job.
Pretty much third and fourth and fifth round guys, as opposed to supposedly sure things in the first round.
Yeah, it's funny because somebody did an analysis a few years ago, and they said that, you know, there were more, you get more Pro Bowl players and All Pros in the first round, but you get more solid players that have longer careers in the second round. And if you were just to do the mathematical, you know, equation of, you know, who started how many games and all that kind of stuff, you'd be surprised. The second round is better. So the second round is really made up of a lot of guys who could have been first rounders if they didn't get an injury, if they was in the right system, if they didn't get suspended, you know, they didn't have a fallout with the coach. You know, it could be any number of things, and a guy is in the second round. I mean, obviously you're going to always have some, you know, some one-in-a-lifetime, you know, talents, you know, in the first round. But, you know, when you get past the top, say, 10 in the first round, and you get to the last 20-something picks in the first round, and you look at the second round, the talent can't be that much different when you're talking about, you know, a whole entire NCAA 200-something schools, right? And so for these guys to be rated that high, there's not much difference talent-wise from the second rounder to a first rounder, but they're in the second round. Maybe they ran a slow time. You know, Jerry Rice ran a 4.8. Thank goodness you didn't get him out the first round. But the 49ers got him at like 17 or something
17,
crazy.
18,
yeah.
18,
I think it was 16.
It wasn't the top 10. It was, yeah, exactly.
But I recall when Rice was being drafted, I was working in Jackson, and that was when the draft was like on Tuesday during the day, midday, and the Saturday before the draft, the Jets flew down to Jackson because Jerry was living in Jackson with his brother Tom, who played for Jackson, had graduated from Jackson State. And had him come over to Jackson State to time him in the 40, you know, what, 3-4 days before the draft.
Right.
And
by then
you should know, you know, everybody's time and all of this stuff. And they ended up drafting Al Toon.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like we like him, but we just wish he was like a tenth of a second faster.
Yeah.
And we like everything about him. You know,
and speaking of Jerry Rice, they were playing, I believe, either Grambling or Tennessee State in the Circle City Classic in Indianapolis. And Jerry broke a, like, 50, 60-yard touchdown reception. And one of the sportscasters from the station in Jackson asked a scout, I think he was from the Packers, you know, asked him the question in the press box, said, are we looking at a sure first-round pick in Jerry Rice here? And the guy said to him, well, you know, I don't know. We haven't seen him block.
Wow.
I mean, are we looking at an offensive guard, an offensive tackle, or a receiver here?
Yeah. Or a smoke screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know, but, you know,
it just gets crazy.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. But,
So we'll have some second guessing thrown out next week. I don't know what it'll be, but you know, let's check back in a couple of years and say, wow, how could they miss that guy?
Yeah, but one thing for sure, the draft will be different with it not being in New York. I don't think you'll have the same level of animus and boobers in Nashville as you do when it's in New York.
Yeah, that's the trip. It's kind of change. So I think the NFL has done a great job of moving the draft around. And as much as I like going to New York and that draft thing at Radio City Music Hall, you know, became, you know, such a tradition for them. I like the fact that they move it around the country, and they've had these cities coming in bidding for this thing, right? So
yeah.
I went last year when it was in Dallas. I went 2 years ago when it was in Philly. I did not go to it when it was in Chicago, but I saw it on TV, and it was very impressive. But there were some boo birds in Philly, as you might
suspect. But of course.
Oh, yeah.
But of course.
and they say the biggest boos for Drew Pearson the former Cowboys receiver who came out
well,
to get to beat Dallas.
He started it.
Yeah, he did. He did. If you haven't seen it, you can find it on Google. It's just a classic moment with Drew Pearson egging on the Eagles fans. But you know, the crowds they get at these events in these other cities is just incredible. You know, if you remember when Obama was in Chicago when, you know, he was elected president, right? And
right.
Remember that scene, you know, alongside the lake and all the people's out there and stuff. I'm not saying the draft was that, but it was like the second. It was more people than was at Trump's inauguration.
Come on now. Come on now. Come on now. Light up. you won't be going to the White House.
Yeah, to go get some Arby's, man.
Hey. Hey, if you like burgers, you know where to go.
Yeah, but they I mean, the draft has come a long, long way from back in the dark ages when, you know, they would just, you know, take newspaper clippings and magazine clippings and word of mouth and pick a guy. It's come a long, long way.
I mean,
it's become an event, you know, and you know, you have preseason, regular season, postseason, draft season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a season unto itself. And, I mean, if, you know, give it to the NFL. They know how to pump things and, you know, the from the PR prospect and keep themselves relevant the year round. And the draft really does that. And, you know,
yeah.
How
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Always, yeah, they know how to do
something.
That. And then there's other stuff that. that keeps them in the news that they'd rather not have to happen.
Yeah,
that's going to be a heavily redacted video. Now it's going to be released to the free world. But it's like, you do not want to unsee that. And I'm not even thinking about going in that direction.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever they go, you know, it's kind of like TMZ was going to get the video anyway. So, if they keep it sealed and all this kind of stuff, one day it's going to be on TMZ. That's the official NFL video video scandal service, right? They had the Ray Rice thing. They had the Kareem Hunt thing.
Yeah.
You know, surprised they didn't have the Deflategate. But, you know, they get stuff, man.
Yeah, they kind of replaced NFL films.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, man. Yep. Well, JV, I tell you, man, it's always great. You bring an interesting perspective and a lot of knowledge. And, you know, like I always tell you, you know, you're the man. Just
hey,
keep
doing
it.
I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate it.
Terrific.
All right, man. Well, hey, you fellas have a good one, man. Enjoy it.
Okay, JV.
Right.
Thanks
all
a
right,
bunch.
Peace. Okay. Yep, okay.
See, that's a wealth of knowledge right there.
My man, Jarrett Bell, JB.
I wasn't even going to go Robert Kraft's way. I wasn't going to talk about Kraft. I was going to keep it on the field. But, you know, today they said the video's going to be out there. So, y'all, you know, knock yourselves out if you want to look at something that creepy. But I'm not going to be one of them. While the time we have left, we want to wrap up a little bit more football. There is some HBCU news in the SWAC, and on May 7th, and I think it's and Grambling's having a celebration of what would have been Coach Eddie Robinson's 100th birthday this year. They're going to have Nick Saban come on campus for a town hall with Coach Nick Saban.
That should be real interesting.
Yeah, it should be. I think that's awesome.
That's a big deal. That's a real big deal. And that just speaks to how well respected Coach Rob was and remains, you know, even in death. You know, he was quite a guy, even the greats of the game, you know, when he was coaching, you know, paid homage to him, the Bear Bryants and the Joe
John Robinson, not Robinson, but what's the guy that went to Tampa? Okay. SC's coach.
Oh, McKay.
McKay, yeah. John McKay was a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was some kind of a coach, some kind of a man. You know, just can't say enough about him and the caliber, not only the caliber of athletes he produced, just but the caliber of men and citizens and like, you know, the things that he believed in and, you know, what he demanded of his players just transcended, you know, the football field. And, you know, we just need more coaches like that who don't just give lip service, you know, to the idea of academics and citizenship and that kind of thing.
Well, he invested in their lives, and that was obvious by the you'll see the reverence the former players have for him and the careers that the guys have gone on to beyond football. And
right.
So that's the mark of it, where he did not, you know, they just weren't football players, and next thing you know, they're doing something that they're not making contributions to society. Everybody's having an impact on where they are, and I think he
right.
preached that along the way. Another HBCU piece of news is that Norfolk State's Robert Jones, the head coach of Norfolk State, he has won the College Insider's Skip Prosser Award, and that he beat out 24 other finalists to take home this award. It's named after the former Wake Forest coach, Skip Prosser, who died suddenly in 2007. And it's presented annually to the Division I coach who not only achieves success on the court but also displays moral integrity off of it. So hats off to Coach Jones. This is like the third award this year for him, where he won the MEAC Coach of the Year Award and the National Association of Basketball Coaches District 15 Coach of the Year Awards. So, and it's the first time he's been nominated for the Skip Prosser. So hats off to Coach Jones. And
yeah, that's
for them,
good
the
stuff.
Job that he's done.
That's some good stuff. Now it'll be interesting to see if that translates into bigger and better things for him, you know, in the coaching arena, because, you know, obviously, you know, he can coach.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I mean,
we'll keep our eyes on that one.
Okay, I was good. There were other things. The NBA playoffs are going on. We want to fly through those, but fly past them. But we want to talk about one thing over the weekend, the Masters. We want to bring in producer Ricky Hampton, golfer extraordinaire, and what that week, the weekend victory for Tiger meant to Ricky on that in that regard. So just getting his feelings on how well what it means to the golf world, because it seems like a lot of cats that played against him couldn't have been happier for him. So we wanted to bring Ricky on to talk about Tiger and his win. Ricky, you there, sir?
What's up, fellas?
Hey,
man, that was great, Skull and Tim. And, you know, you mentioned something that I thought was interesting, too, to see so many of those young guns waiting for him. I think Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and Koepka, all those guys are waiting after the 18th green for him. I mean, those players are what Tiger Woods spawned. With his, you know, training, he approached the game as an athlete. I've been playing golf all my life. Tim, you know I'm not an athlete, so you don't have any beer bellies like mine
basketball.
Out there anymore. I mean, he really, that was his impact to create just great, a generation of great golfers like Koepka and Dustin Johnson and all these guys who are very athletic. Tony Finau. I thought one thing that really hit me in the final group of the Masters guys, we had two men of color in Tiger Woods and Tony Finau.
And Finau.
I mean, and that was huge for me. And Finau is going to win that thing one day. That was his second trip there, and I think he's got two top 10 finishes. So look for him down the road, and you know, Cameron Champ is another young black golfer who's already won a tournament. It was one of the fall tournaments. He's in his first 4 year on the tour. So the game is in good hands, and all these guys were inspired by Tiger Woods. Now, you know, when he came out in 97, we just thought we were going to get this generation of black golfers. That hadn't really come to fruition because, you know, this game is so expensive to play and just to get to, that has dampened that quite a bit. But hey, it's great. When people ask me all the time, who's the greatest golfer ever, Jack Nicklaus is the greatest champion for sure. He's got 18 major wins. The Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer that I have seen in my lifetime. There's only two guys in that conversation. It's a two-man conversation, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods.
But you talk about Tiger not having spawned a generation of black golfers, but I think he has, just not on the pro level, because you see more and more blacks, golfers, you know, more and more blacks watching golf. More and more blacks watching golf.
No doubt about that.
And
he brings in, I got a call from former Pistons coach Ray Scott. He's a friend of our show on the African-American Athlete. You know, Coach Scott, the first black man to win the Coach of the Year Award. He calls me, he's screaming, yelling, Ricky, are you watching this? I said, yeah, Coach, I didn't know you watch golf. Well, I don't, but I watch Tiger.
And I think right there, it speaks to the pool, because the numbers that CBS got on Sunday had to have been spurred by people who would otherwise be doing something totally different on a Sunday afternoon,
exactly,
looking at Tiger.
And that's why all these other golfers, you know, pull for Tiger, you know, because when Tiger is going good, golf is going good, and it's, you know, just makes things better for everybody.
Yeah.
When he was on the shelf, you know, golf kind of waned.
No doubt, man. These guys are earning $2 million checks, $1.5 million checks. Before Tiger got on the tour, that was the entire purse. I mean, he is a human ATM. He's created more jobs for in professional golf than ever. You look at the Golf Channel, the success they've had over there. You know, this guy Brandel Chamblee has made a career out of bashing Tiger. So it was so funny to see him eating crow the other night. But of course, guys, Tiger's a polarizing figure. Some people don't think he's black enough or his issues off the court. So all those things bring people in to cheer for him and cheer against him. But I thought.
Well, I did hear the Kaplan Nation stuff come up again, and then you got 45 giving him the talk of giving him Congressional Medal of Freedom, which is like, really, for winning a golf tournament? Come on.
I'm like, dude, you trying to blow my golf high with this.
Exactly. that put a different spin on the whole afternoon. I'm like, oh my goodness, come on, guys.
Here's my thing. I'm sorry, Roscoe. Let me just get this in right quick. Here's my thing. I always cheer for Tiger. I cheer for Tiger more for what he represents than the person he is. I've covered him over the years. And he's always been good to me. He knew my father, so I always had a little in with him. But I cheer for him because he represents what Teddy Rose didn't get to do, what Charlie Sifford had to wait so long to do, and so many other guys who came before him. So I'm always cheering out there because whatever he thinks of himself, I know what other people think of him when they see him.
Well put.
That's good. Thanks, Rick. Well,
hey, thank you.
We're at the end here. So thank you for your input. Yeah. So we got, you know, just a big thing on the NBA playoffs. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just gonna tell you. You guys had me cracking up when you talked about John McKay. I always remember that joke, Coach McKay. What do you think about your team's execution? I'm all for it.
Yeah. A lot of people be saying that when they look at these schedules that come up, like I said, that come out of the NFL, that some guys have a murderer's row, and some people have it extremely easy, it seems, in terms of what's going to be happening. So we got the just a few seconds here with that. We got Indiana and Boston going into are in overtime. We got Indiana by 4 in overtime over the Celtics. They're at the Garden. You got Detroit.
In the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter. That's a fourth quarter score.
Fourth quarter, my bad. Fourth quarter. Okay, we got that. And then we got the second quarter. You got the Bucks by three over the Pistons. That should be a sweep right there. And I think then later on tonight, you got Utah and Houston, where you got the Rockets are leading by a 1-0 score. So we're just going to – we'll pick up NBA playoffs next week, and we'll go again with the NBA – with the NFL draft. But next week we'll have with us NFL Network a reporter, Steve Weiss. So on behalf of Jared Bell, the outstanding job he did tonight with us, Roscoe, what are we going to do, man?
We're going to express ourselves always.
We'll see you next time. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now is express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, do it good. Oh yeah. It's not what you look like when you do it.